Welcome to the May Road Show, episode number 152. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is, he's not with me. They broke up the Dream Team, damn it. I'm not happy about this. Not happy with the way 2018 is starting. But I'm happy for him. He's actually down in Orlando, Florida right now for UFC on Fox 28, Stevens versus Emmett. We'll certainly talk about that here in just a little bit. But he is on site down there in the land of Disney with our man Matt Erickson as well. They're handling business out there. Me, myself, I am back home in Las Vegas, enjoying a little bit of time with the wife and kid, enjoying a little time in the cold weather of Las Vegas. Man, I thought we were getting away without winter, but it's kind of gotten cold these last couple days. Kind of, I can't complain. I know there's a bunch of you in the world that probably have to deal with snow and warming up your cars in the morning and all that nonsense, shoveling snow to get out of your driveway, but I'm spoiled. I live in the desert, so it dropped down in like the 40s, and that's been a little bit cold lately. But the wind blows. That's the problem. The wind blows. Anyway, listen, gotta get right to it, right? The breaking news: Dana White speaking with TMZ, confirming, giving us all the good news that we wanted, the clarification that we needed, or like completely not at all. I'm assuming you may have heard this, but just in case, let's do this. It's short, so what I want to do is just set up this little clip of Dana White talking to TMZ Sports about Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather, and most importantly, the state of that lightweight title. And, well, here's what happened.
Conor's your biggest star. You always get asked about Conor. What's the latest with him and Floyd? Are we anywhere closer to a rematch?
I don't know. I think the only way a rematch makes sense and that fight is in the UFC. Yeah, of course. Yeah, we're talking.
Oh, so
Al Heyman and I have a very good relationship. We always talk.
Right.
So we'll see.
So is Floyd, why is Floyd worried about the paycheck, or is it about more about his skills?
He absolutely should be worried about his skills.
Right.
The paycheck's going to be there. He should worry about the skills.
Is the money there? He requires, what, nine figures? Is nine figures there for him to fight in the UFC?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, listen, you know, it all depends on what the thing could sell. I mean, that's what you pay.
Right.
You pay whatever you think you can make from selling the fight. There's nothing done. We're not in active negotiations.
You're not?
No.
Okay.
No.
So it's not looking good right now?
Well, it's just we're not. Anything is possible, but just
right.
I don't think Floyd needs the money right now.
All the fans want to know, are you going to strip Conor of his belt before the Khabib Ferguson fight?
I said in the last press conference, that fight will be for the title.
For the title. So it's not for the interim title.
It's not for the interim title. That fight is for the title.
For the real. So Conor's going to be stripped, presumably a week before. Or...
That fight will be for the title.
I mean, you have to strip Conor, though.
Right.
So is Conor upset that you're about to strip him?
Is he upset?
Yeah.
Oh, Conor understands. So, listen, Conor made a lot of money. You know, he wants some time off, but the division has to go on and the business has to go on.
Does Conor get the winner? Or?
Yeah, I'd like to see Conor fight the winner.
Well, what's the latest with Conor? When's he saying he's coming back?
Well, it was August and then September. I don't know.
Okay.
I say it all the time, man. With that kind of money, Conor might never come back.
You still believe he might never come back.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
All right, now listen. Does any of that sound familiar to you? Because to me, it sounded almost exactly like that press conference in Boston, where journalist after journalist stood up and tried to get Dana White to clarify with Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov right there what was going on with the belt. Matt Erickson asked him a question about it. Brad Okamoto asked him a question about it. Ariel Helwani asked him a question about it. Multiple questions across the board. And Dana White answers it the same way every single time. He won't say the word stripped. It's bizarre. It's awkward. It's weird. And the weird part is that Dana gets kind of combative about it. Now, he was pretty patient with this TMZ reporter. You know, maybe Dana was in a good mood. Of course, that day in Boston, you know, he really wanted to sit there and talk about Ferguson and Nurmagomedov. I doubt he wanted to talk about Conor McGregor. And probably at that time, to be honest with you, things were probably still a little bit fluid in the back. So Dana gets a little defensive about this, but on this particular occasion, he's pretty calm about it. But he won't use the word stripped. He won't use the word undisputed title. He calls it the real title. Now, I don't know that I've ever really heard Dana use the word undisputed, so maybe it's not fair that he's not calling it the undisputed champion. He's calling it the real belt, the real champ. And it's just weird to me. It's completely weird to me, and I've been racking my brains, because here's the thing. I mean, it's very deliberate. This is not an accident, right? It's not just a bizarre coincidence that any time the word stripped is brought up, he recoils in horror before he gives an answer, right? I mean, there's a reason Dana is saying what he's saying. So I'm trying to figure it out. And, you know, again, he's not really being forthcoming with his answer, so it's a little bit difficult to say. But here's what I think. All right, first one off the top, I think maybe it's just that he wants to allow Connor to walk away from the belt, right? He wants to allow Connor to give up the title on his own. Now, Dana does have a lot of respect for Connor McGregor. I can tell you that behind the scenes. I can tell you he has a lot of respect for him. I know that there's reports sometimes that they don't get along and whatever else, but I'm telling you, in multiple off-record conversations over the years, not to mention what he said in front of the public, I can tell you that Dana White has a lot of respect for Conor McGregor. Is he tough to work with? Of course he is. But you remember, I mean, think about way back in the day. Remember when it was Anderson Silva on Top of the World, and he was always so weird with interviews and things that he was doing. I mean, this was at the height of Anderson Silva. Remember Dana always used to call him an artist and say, you know, it's tough sometimes to work with artists, but that's what they are. And I think he has very much the same feeling for Conor. I mean, this is an incredible fighter, a master businessman. And Dana loves everything that he's done for the company, of course. Conor McGregor has made the UFC a lot of money. He's put a lot of money in his own pocket, but he's brought a lot of money to the UFC as well. So that was my first thought. Like, maybe they're just giving him a little bit of respect to let him walk away. Maybe they've said behind the scenes, listen, FYI, when this fight happens, you've got to be done with the title by then. Do it on your own terms. That's one theory, okay? That's one theory. Just a respect play, maybe, more than anything. Okay, so that's one. Second one, and I think maybe there's more validity to this one. Again, I'm just kind of spitballing here. I don't know, because Dana hasn't answered, you know, behind the scenes any differently than he's answering in front of the scenes. Maybe it's a backup plan. All right. I mean, this is not the first time we've tried to put together Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov, right? We've had issues. The matchup has seemed a little bit snake bit at times. So maybe this is a backup plan to make sure if something goes wrong, I'm knock on wood, I'm knocking on every piece of wood I can find right now here in my office. Knock on wood. But if something happens, they've got options. They can still have Conor McGregor as a lightweight champion of the world. And that one, I guess, when I step back and think about it, probably makes the most sense to me. That what they're saying is, if we do indeed get to April, all right, we're in Brooklyn, New York. It's time, finally, for UFC 223 at the Barclays Center. It's April, we'll say April 6th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. Everybody's made weight. I mean, maybe we even have to go into the nighttime. Maybe we have to wait till the ceremonials. Man, especially with that New York commission, you never know. But maybe it's just a backup plan to say, once everything is good to go and it's official and it's done, at that point we make it official that we're stripping Conor McGregor and that this is for the Undisputed Championship of the World. You know, we say, hey, Conor, you know, it's been too long. And I think everybody, I mean, we've talked about it before on this show, and I think it's obvious. I mean, Conor McGregor doesn't even need a belt. I mean, any fight that he fights, people are going to tune into. It's going to sell. It's going to matter. I mean, did it matter in Floyd Mayweather's boxing career what belt he was fighting for? No, he would fight, and then he would just hand over the titles because he didn't want to pay the sanctioning fees. Well, I think it's the same thing here. So maybe that's the one that makes the most sense. They're just having a backup plan in place. Don't strip him until you absolutely have to. And I think that would kind of fit into the rhetoric, right? I mean, he's saying, you know, yes, I said he has to be stripped. I didn't say I'm stripping him right now. I didn't say, you know, I mean, but that would mean that Connor understands that April 7th is your last day, or April 6th, rather, maybe, is your last day as UFC lightweight champion. I don't know. What do you guys think? Hit me up at MMA Junkie John. Am I crazy? Does one of those make more sense than the other? I think it's the second one. I think it's the second one. Hopefully we'll get to talk to Dana between now and then. I know for a fact he won't be in London, so we won't get to see him then. He has got some family activities planned that day, so I know he won't be in London. But maybe we can grab him here in Las Vegas sometime in March. It's kind of a slower month for the UFC, so I'll hit him up again. It's hard. Man, we got that one interview with him last summer. We wanted to try to get it every quarter, and man, it's hard to nail that man down. So maybe we can do something in March and kind of touch on this and start setting things up a little bit. The other things that you heard in there, I'm sure, Floyd Mayweather, you know, he's going to keep throwing that out there. I just can't see it. And he did. Let's say there's that one little clip. It says, now that didn't keep TMZ from running with the headline that he's still talking to Floyd. But he did say, you know, hey, there are no active negotiations ongoing right now. So, I still think Floyd is just kind of teasing things out there. And as dumb as it sounds, and boy, does it sound dumb, I would I would be in for Floyd Mayweather versus CM Punk. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's just, come on. I feel stupid even talking about it, but I'd watch. I'd definitely watch. The morbid curiosity would be too much. I would make sure I was at that event, no question about it. Floyd versus Conor, I mean, come on. We don't need to spend any time on that. Conor would kill him. I mean, it's not even a fair fight. I don't see how you would sanction it. I appreciate, you know, Dana saying that that's the fight that needs to happen if they do a rematch. But I just don't even know how you'd sanction that. I get how you sanction it the other way. I was not a huge guy that blamed the NSAC for sanctioning the fight. I mean, Conor has trained boxing, but, man, Floyd has not trained kickboxing, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, and he's going against a young animal. Yeah, I think I would have a problem if that was sanctioned. I think I'd have to. I mean, I get it. Floyd Mayweather's a boxing legend, one of the greatest defensive boxers of all times, an incredible athlete. But I think I'd have some problems with that getting sanctioned, right? I mean, that's not even a fair fight, right? Especially at 40. Anyway, all right, enough about that. I'm not talking about it. But I did want to point out that, you know, Dana did actively say there's no ongoing negotiations. Of course, anything is possible. He's always going to leave the door open. If Floyd Mayweather does somehow say, yes, I'm crazy, I'm going to do this, get me in there, hell yeah, Dana White's going to say yes. But I really think it's more about what they're going to do with the Zuffa boxing. What they're going to do with the Zuffa boxing, which is another thing we need to talk to Dana about. Where is that progressing? So I'll jump on that. Hopefully we can get that set up. So Conor McGregor, God bless him. He's in the news every day. Now, what do you think about this? He immediately after that all goes down, he steps up and puts out there on social media that he tried to step in and save UFC 222. Ali Abdelaziz, manager of Frank Yeager, immediately says that's BS. You know, that never happened. Interesting stuff back and forth there. I don't doubt that Conor McGregor said, let me jump in there. And I also don't doubt that never even got to Ali Abdelaziz. So I believe Ali Abdelaziz is being honest about this. That's why these stories sometimes are so hard to get the quote-unquote right story out of it. And you have to be very, very careful that you say, so-and-so said. So you never know where these things get filtered. You know, that's the whole thing about, you know, the Tyron Woodley and Nate Diaz thing. This is how things work behind the scenes. You know, a lot of times, you know, Sean Shelby, Mick Maynard, Dana White, you know, they're sitting around and they're talking about options. They're like, all right, come on, we can do this, we can do this, we can do that. You know, they're moving in multiple different directions. And as they're moving, you know, they're shooting out texts to managers or to fighters or whatever. Same thing the other way. You know, fighters see a headline on MMA Junkie. They see a headline on some of the other sites out there, and they send a text or a direct message or whatever to Dana White, to Sean Shelby, to Mick Maynard. You hear it all the time. Put me in, man. Put me in. I want that spot. So there's texts going out. There's texts coming in. There's multiple things going on. And if you talk to somebody at 10 o'clock in the morning and then you talk to them at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, things have changed entirely. And I think that's one thing that's really, really important to remember, whether you're reading about these stories, trying to decipher who's telling the truth and who's not, whether you're reporting on the stories, if you happen to be kind of going through this, is being very, very careful about how you phrase the truth, so to speak, because the truth changes from minute to minute and hour to hour. I've sat back there. I've seen it firsthand. I've seen how it works. sometimes messages don't make it to all parties involved because the possibilities are just being in there. So I kind of feel in this situation, I would not be surprised if Conor McGregor said, let me in. I want that fight. Who knows if he's in any shape. And the first text might have been back to him, what do you weigh right now? And he goes, well, I'm 185, but I can be 145 by then or whatever. You know what I mean? The guy's out there chilling on a boat, you know, doing his thing, enjoying his life with his kid. He's, you know, he's probably put on a few pounds. So, I mean, those things happen. But I don't doubt that Conor said that. It's like the whole thing last year when we did have the interview with Dana, and he said, you know, Conor told me he wants to fight Khabib in Russia. And everybody goes, ah, come on. He never said that. You're just making that up. And now what? A year later, geez, what do you know? The UFC's talking about going to Russia. And what do you know? They're talking. I mean, Conor knew that. And Conor was like, let me on there. Now, it's probably not going to happen because that just because the way the hours work out, that's going to be a fight night when it happens, not a pay-per-view. Might happen later this year. But if it does, it'll be a fight night. So I don't know how you get Khabib on there, but I know they'd love to have Khabib on there. I mean, maybe you suck it up for the importance of the market and you put, you know, if he happens to be light, you can't do Conor and Khabib in a fight night. That has to be pay-per-view. But you can't go to Russia for your first time and have them go to a fight at, you know, 4 in the morning or whatever. Now, I know the people in England are going to be pissed when they hear that because they did it for Michael Bisping. Sorry. Sorry, you've had the UFC for too long. These new markets, you know, they've got to serve them in local time. Shanghai, they couldn't go to Shanghai at 7 o'clock in the morning, like they do in Tokyo. They probably don't need to do it in Tokyo, to be honest with you. They got to fix that stuff. Anyway, it's neither here nor there. I'm just saying, I believe that Conor did probably say I'll step in there, and I believe probably that it never even got to Ali Abdelaziz, which is why he's calling shenanigans. When really it did happen that way. They're both in the right. And that can happen sometimes. You can have two different truths for one story. I know that's frustrating a little bit, and that's why you have to be very, very careful how you paint things and how you say things. So, anyway, that damn Conor McGregor, he finds a way to keep himself in the news, doesn't he? Which theory is it? Hit me up. Let me know. All right, of course, I did want to take a quick look back to Austin before we start talking about Orlando this week. Didn't get to do the and a half episode, unfortunately, the way the schedule and the time are working, but I want to get to that later, too. I want to do and a half every week. I really do. I want to wrap things up every single damn week, and just wasn't able to do it this week, unfortunately. But one thing about the event that we'll talk about, because it seems like Nate Diaz was the biggest star out of this whole thing, right? I mean, how amazing was that? Nate Diaz coming in and stealing the show right after Derek Lewis had kind of stolen the show by taking out the J and nearly lighting it right there. I just had a funny piece of information. I got an email. I wish I would have saved the email. I was searching for it right now. I didn't save the email that I can find right now. But I got an email that the little kids behind Nate Diaz, that a lot of people have made a lot out of Nate Diaz, or about the kids being behind Nate Diaz as well, those were actually Leonard Garcia's daughters. So I wasn't able to verify that information, but somebody sent me that email, and I did see Leonard Garcia there right before the show got in. Of course, makes sense, a good friend of Cowboy Cerrone, but we were standing outside, and he was picking up tickets and at the Zuffa box office, and pretty funny stuff. That was his kid, so one little more level to that story, but I thought that was pretty funny. But, you know, listen, the story here to me was Donald Cerrone and Yancy Medeiros. First of all, a great crowd in Austin. Want to say, great crowd, rewarded with a great show, entertaining from start to finish. I mean, you look at those prelims, five out of the first six fights ended in the first round, and the one that didn't, Lucy Pudilova and Sarah Morris, they were going at it, man. They really were. So, fun fight, and we'll talk about a couple things on it, but Cowboy Cerrone and Yancy Medeiros, man, hopefully you were able to listen to the episode last week or catch some of our coverage from MMA Junkie, because just two of the classiest individuals, two of the best dudes in the sport. I mean, two very different attitudes. You know, Cowboy Cerrone open all week about, you know, his frustrations, the way he deals with fighting. He's always been that way. You know, one of the dudes that you think is the baddest, you know, fight anybody, anywhere, anytime kind of cats. And admits, you know, the nerves still get to me, the fear gets to me, all those things. It's you know, it's crazy, you know, and God, man, he was so open and honest, and those clips took off everywhere, and I was so happy that those clips did take off everywhere and people saw it, because, man, those are those real moments behind the scenes where, man, what these people do, lock themselves in a cage with another human being hell-bent on doing destruction in front of thousands of people, in front of millions potentially on television. I mean, it's some scary, scary stuff. And they do it for money. Don't get me wrong. None of them would do it for free. Well, there's a couple that would do it for free. Most of them wouldn't do it for free. But at the end of the day, they do it for entertainment, man. And I just, every now and then, I think you have to step back, man. We see so many fights and just talk about the sport endlessly. And it's, you know, it's one fight to the next. And, you know, this guy sucks and that guy sucks. And, you know, man, you know, I'm not saying that we don't have the right to criticize or that we don't have the right to evaluate. Of course we do. But just remember what these people are going through. Just remember physically and mentally, psychologically, what these men and women are putting themselves through every time they go out there. It's not easy. And I just, man, I thought Cowboy Cerrone summed it up so good before the fight and even discussed it a little bit afterwards. And then Yancy Medeiros, you know, he's a badass dude as well that had been on a fantastic run. And, you know, he's out there giving Cowboy a hat and they're hugging each other. And, you know, now I'm not a big fan of the hug mid-fight. I'm not a big fan of that. I'll side with Dana White on that one. I heard, Joe Rogan tweeted the other day or Instagrammed. I saw that he said he loves it. He thought the respect was awesome. Like, I don't know, man. Right during the middle of the fight, I think it's not good. I think it, first of all, it looks weird. Number one, it's supposed to be a fight. But number two, it's dangerous. Like, what if you're rocked? I mean, you'd have to be a hell of a salesman to do that. But what if you're rocked and you're like, you know, you need to recover, so you just give a little, like, you know, shake your head yes and show them the glove touch and give them, I mean, you could buy yourself a couple seconds, right? And if you're that guy that just tagged somebody and now they're like, oh, yeah, that was a good one. Like, I don't want you to tell me it was a good one. I want to follow up with another shot. Now I can't follow up because you're trying to give me some dap. You know what I mean? So that's my thing. Is I love the respect of the sport. I really, really do, man. That's one of the things when people are like, oh, cage fighting, that's such an awful thing. It's terrible. You know, that's one of the first things I say is, man, if you ever watch a fight, you'll see, you know, one of the first things that they do 99.9% of the time when a fight is over is they embrace, they show some type of respect. I love that aspect of our sport. I love that aspect of it. I'm okay with it, like, you know, if you do it at the start of the third round or the fifth round of the title fight, like, I'm okay with that, like that. Oh, man, you know, props for what we've done so far. Let's go out and give it, you know, our, you know, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. But, like, the mid-round, like, oh, that was dope. Give me a little hug, you sick son of a bitch. You know what I mean? Like, no, because I think that messes up the rhythm of the fight, and it can be a tactical issue as well. So I didn't love that, but I did love the respect. I mean, Yancy Medeiros, good all week long. And how about even, you know, coming back after the loss? And I know that's never fun. Man, who the hell wants to get a microphone in front of your face after you just lost? You know, you're in the main event. You know, it's a big moment for you. You got this nice winning streak. You're trying to get your bid to be on UFC Hawaii. All those things are happening, you know. And then you come up short. Who wants to go talk to the media? And Yancy comes out there, not only talks to the media, still in good spirits, and even shares the inside joke that he told his team, you know, where's Mario Yamasaki when you need him? How great was that? Phenomenal. I think Yancy Medeiros made so many fans this week. I hope he did. I hope people saw, you know, our coverage. I know there wasn't a ton of media down there, but I hope people caught our coverage and just saw his attitude the whole week. And I think Yancy Medeiros made a lot of fans because you can't ask for a better attitude. So, big win for Donald Cerrone. You know, where he goes from here, I really would like to see him back at 155. I know he doesn't like that cut. You know, he said at 160, 165. Hell, maybe you start coming up with some catchweight fights. I know that doesn't sound necessarily popular either, but I don't know that Cowboy Cerrone's ever going to be a world champion. I just don't know if it's in the cards for him. I do think he's a UFC Hall of Famer. Absolutely. And maybe I'm a little bit biased. I've always admitted, man, Cowboy's one of my favorite guys. You know, the way he fights, his attitude about fighting, you know, his openness to discuss the realities of fighting, it's all those things together. They make him one of my favorite guys, you know. And you know, I don't know that the card's going to play out the way that his career is gone and what he's got in front of him now for him to be a UFC champion. But to me, he's a UFC Hall of Famer, no question about it. But to me, he's in kind of one of those spots now where, like this, Donald Cerrone was on a 3-fight losing streak. Yancy Medeiros was on a 3-fight winning streak. I didn't hear anybody say, well, that's a stupid fight. I don't want to see that. And I think you know, Cowboy Cerrone is a different personality entirely than like the Diaz brothers. But the Diaz brothers are guys that it doesn't matter what their record is. It doesn't matter what somebody else's record is, right? You just put them in a fight and you go, yeah, I'll watch that fight. I mean, Cowboy Cerrone, name me anybody where you don't go, I'll sign up for that, you know? So maybe catch weights wouldn't be terrible, you know, some 160s, some 165s or whatever with some lightweights that you know, save the lightweights a few pounds and not make Donald cut all the way down. He admits it's tough on him. Because, man, some of those 170s are beasts. I wasn't as worried with Yancey because I think he's a smaller guy as well. But, you know, go back and look at that Darren Till fight. You know, I know Darren Till's the biggest of the big, but there's some other big dudes in that division too. So, tough spot. But another great fight for Cowboy Cerrone. Again, I think both guys gained a lot of respect and, you know, a lot of love over this week. So, class individuals. Can't say enough about them. Another individual you can't say enough about, Derek Lewis, of course. The hard-fought win over Marcin Tybura. Man, this was a tough fight for Lewis. You knew it would be going in. Had a feeling Tabura's wrestling was going to cause some problems, but he made one mistake. And Lewis, very reminiscent. I mean, and I think it's just because we saw it, the week before. But, I mean, how reminiscent of it was like a Yoel Romero fight where Derek Lewis is just patient, you know, patient, and then explode. Patient, explode. Looks tired. Patient, explode. Smart. I mean, I think that's the way he has to fight. That's the way he has to fight. He's a big dude. Says he's working on his cardio. Says his back is okay. I don't know what he's saying behind the scenes, but, you know, he looked good. He didn't look as stiff as he had in some of his previous fights. And hard fought, dug deep, came back, got the knockout. And then, of course, the fantastic comments after the fact about going deep. And hopefully you got to see the little video of the scrum he did as well, where he even did a little sexy dance to show what he planned on doing when he got home that night. You can't beat it. You can't beat it. But listen, you know, I like Marcin Tybura, man. He's such a good dude, and I do think he's going to give some people some problems. I think he's going to be lurking around, you know, the top 10, top 15 for quite some time. I think there's a lot of people he can beat. And I think he was on his way to winning this fight. All three judges had it even going into that third round. Tybura was having some success, and, you know, had he been able to keep the fight on the ground, he would have cruised to a victory, but Derek Lewis caught him. And, you know, not a lot of protest there. You don't want Derek Lewis swanging and banging on you. So, but listen, afterwards, our man Cole Coffey followed up with Derek Lewis because, you know, he had posted that Instagram post that he thought he might have a broken hand, but he wasn't 100% sure about it. So we had Cole Coffey just kind of do a little follow-up. But I figured, you know what? Budding media superstar Cole Coffey not with us right now. But I had to share this phone call because look at this. Our video guy, who then became a podcast host, is now becoming a full-fledged journalist. And who doesn't want to hear that?
Hello?
Derek, it's Kenny. How are you, buddy?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Is it good time still?
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, cool. All right, well, first, we saw your Instagram post where you posted that the hands break. Let's just get, a little update on that. Was that something that you knew for sure that you had ideas that night, or did you think it was maybe banged up and they just kind of, you just went and saw the doctor, or was it already kind of planned? Did you already have an inclination that it was already broke?
Hey, you got a lot of questions about it. No, I haven't got x-rays and nothing on it yet, but it just felt like it was broken.
Oh, okay.
The swelling been real bad. Yeah, I believe I broke it the first punch. I hit his elbow. Punched his elbow.
Wow, you think on the very first punch of the fight?
Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, is that when that happens, I mean, like, did it kind of change your – does that change your game plan when something like that happens, or is it – you're like, do you kind of just push in the back of your head? You're like, no, that didn't really happen. That didn't really happen. I mean, what do you do when that happens?
You know, I really don't even think about it because the pain goes away anyway, just like a little bit, then it goes away. I put it way back in my head. Then after the fight over with, then I feel it. But my adrenaline be so pumped before the fight and during the fight, it just... Mm-hmm. I don't even think about it until afterwards.
Gotcha. So Well, I mean, is it, so what's the initial plan right now? I mean, is it to actually go meet with the doctor and figure out for sure if it's actually broke or like what's the next step?
Yeah, I'm waiting on the UFC right now. It's supposed to give me a doctor close by and go see, get x-rays and hopefully get a cast.
Okay.
Before this weekend, because I want to go to the rodeo cook-off this week.
Oh, yeah? What's the rodeo cook-off thing?
I guess it's before they start the rodeo.
Okay.
I'm going to be a guest judge, a celebrity guest judge.
Oh, nice.
Judging, like, food, whatever they cooking out there, like brisket or whatever.
What would you say is your, where's your area expertise when it comes to barbecue? Like, what's your go-to thing that you got the skills on? I'm like, I'm a brisket man myself, but I don't know. What's your area of expertise?
Well, you could say ribs.
Okay.
Of course, the ribs.
Are you a dry rub guy or you a sauce guy?
I'm a sauce guy. I don't like a lot of fat, though.
Oh, okay. Good. Shoot, that's ribs to me.
Can't be too soft though.
Yeah. So you're hoping to have the UFC. Hopefully they'll get that squared away. I guess this week that you'll get with the doctor and see and you're hoping for this week to get that taken care of or.
Yeah. Hopefully today. Really.
Yeah.
So when I get off the phone with you, I call them and see. If they could get me in sometime today.
Okay. Typically on something like that, I mean, what's a typical timetable on a return from a break? Have you broken your hand before?
No, it's my first time. Okay. Well, I've broken it in a street fight before, but I never got it checked out.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a street fight. It's when I was in prison. But I didn't never get it fixed or anything. It's because I would have got in trouble if the guards would have found out I was swinging.
Damn, that's hardcore. I didn't know about all that. That's not something you put on all your medical list.
Oh, no, not at all.
Have they given you, I mean, like, when you've talked to, like, some of your, I guess, your fight buddies and some of the other, I mean, do they have, like, have they given you a sort of a range that they think that if it is broke that you'd be out?
Yeah, it says 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay. 6 to 8 weeks, about 2 months or so. Okay. All right, well, that's good. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, how'd that fourth round go? Did you still have enough cardio?
No, I didn't. Finally got in yesterday, really. Went 5 rounds yesterday. Went all 5.
There you go. So your wife's April, correct?
Yes.
We as fans love it when you throw that stuff out there because I think it shows your personality. But when you do stuff like that, when you throw that out there, does she laugh it off? Does she get embarrassed? Does it come with the territory? What does she say to you after you throw some stuff like that out there?
No, she laughs it off. She already know I'm crazy. Even my kids know that.
I saw once in a UFC interview, you called her your butter pecan ice cream.
Yeah, that's my favorite ice cream.
Butter pecan?
Yeah.
I dig it. All right, well, cool, man. Maybe what I'll try to do is reach out after, see what you find out, or if you feel up for it, when you actually go meet with the doctor or something, if you want to give us an update, because I know the guys... I think they want to try to write a little follow up piece about the hand or something. They were trying to figure it out. So maybe when you get your final details, if you don't mind, send me a text or something. We'll get it out there what the deal is, timetable wise or whatever. I did mean to ask: have you went back? Have you watched the fight after the fact now? And what were your thoughts on it after the fact? If you've went back and watched it.
Yeah, I went back and watched it. I usually don't go back and watch none of my fights, but I went back and watched this one because I felt like before the fight, it was just like mental. I was dealing with a lot of mental stuff because I didn't eat before the fight. I usually eat. And so I wound up still eating like 30 minutes before the fight, but I forgot to eat all day, so my body was real weak going into the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have the nutrition that I need, because once it's fight day, I'm just strictly thinking about fight. I'm not thinking about nothing else, nobody else. It's everything about what it could have and all this stuff. Like, anything could happen in the fight, I'm just thinking about that, just that.
Yeah, and so it's easy to, I guess, forget to eat or do that sort of thing.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought I did, it's a lot of improvement I did. Like, in my recent fight, I believe it was a lot of, I improved a lot in some areas, like with my striking, and I believe my speed and everything was up to par.
Mm-hmm.
And my conditioning, I believe, was better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I stayed patient, listened to my coaches and stuff like that. Whenever it was time for me to make a move, I was able to make a move. And whenever I was on the ground, when he was on top of me, I just wanted to stay patient. And also, I don't know if he had baby oil or something on there. He was slippery, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's like even whenever we stood back up and I took his back, and that's whenever I slipped off him, I don't know what he had on, some oil or grease or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I slipped right off him, and that's whenever I fell on the ground. He got on top of me.
Interesting. Well, I know that the refs are supposed to check for that sort of thing, but I mean, I guess that's kind of one of those things. I mean, but you don't think it possibly that he's just an extra sweaty dude, but it felt different than just sweat?
Yeah, it felt different than sweat. You know, I don't know. He's from Poland. I don't know what kind of stuff come out of his pores.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of stuff he eat over there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's good to know, because I mean, I think that was definitely one of the things people talked about. I mean, and speaking to the cardio, just personally, from when I saw, when it did come time that when you needed to throw in the third round, you still had power there, which showed me that the cardio was there, that you didn't overspend yourself either on the ground. And I think that makes sense too, if you were telling yourself to stay patient when he was on top and that sort of thing. I think that's the only area where I've heard or have seen people just kind of still question, or, you know, ask if there's still questions, is on the ground part, wrestling defense, things of that sort. When you looked and watched those things, I mean, was that areas where you're thinking like, okay, I still need to kind of shore this up? Or what has the team kind of said when you talked that over with them?
They just don't like me being on my back, really. They want me to get on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that, and really try to like put my underhooks in and scoot to the side and try work my way up from there, and don't just try to pull myself out of a bad situation and give it on my back and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
My coach hate whenever I give on my back.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I feel more comfortable whenever I do that. So I even had Gabriel Gonzaga black belt on my back like that. He couldn't do it. I mean, basically the same situation. The same, he had his hooks in, were on my back, and I still was able to get him off me.
Mm-hmm.
Same way with Tabor. I said Tabor is a brown belt. And I just feel comfortable. Even in the gym, I feel comfortable just doing that, because I know I've got to protect my neck and watch out for the arm bars and the submissions as well. And I wanted to really pull his head down whenever he was on top of my back too. and try to flip him over, but I was trying to do the shimmy shake, and the more that he stayed in that position, the more I was really getting drained. But as soon as I let it go and rolled over, I felt refreshed again.
Yeah, I bet. How did that feel? Because yeah, there was a couple moments where he would have got a lot of back time or riding time if it was a wrestling match. I mean, how did that feel carrying that weight on the back? Because there's a couple times where. I think you could even hear your corner say, shake him, shimmy shake, you know, and it seemed like it'd go for like a minute, you know, like, so I can see where that would feel refreshed when he finally got off. But I mean, how draining is that when you're in that moment, with that guy that, I'm not sure what he weighed in at 260 or something, but, how was that moment when you're carrying that weight of him on your back and still trying to think of what you need to do? And at that point, is your hand, does the hand even come into your thought at that time when you're doing that as well?
Oh, not at all. I'm not even thinking about my hand. I didn't even think about my hand until I got to the back. After I said, when I was trying to sign for my check, then I realized my hand was broken.
I bet your wife would have stepped in and helped you out on that one.
Hell yeah. She tried to get the copy of it.
Oh, good stuff. All right, well, I won't keep you much longer, but I know you did mention up some names after the fact. I mean, it's been a few days since then, or a couple days, I guess, since then. Is it? I know right now the goal is the hand, and that's what you need to take care of, but have people been hitting you up on social media? Has anybody responded to the initial things you've put out there? And is there a name that stands as for your first goal when you get back in there?
It really don't matter, you know. Of course, Francis, Blaze, and I really want to get the Wardoon fight because that's the fight I was supposed to fight anyways.
Mm-hmm.
They got salt to taste with that in my mouth.
Mm-hmm. So if you had, sorry, right, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, no.
No, so if you're pecking order, it seems to me that Verdum's number one, and then that'd be followed by Ngannou, then probably Blades, if you had to put it in an order.
Yeah.
Okay. Good stuff. All right, Derek, I appreciate you taking the call, and I hope that hand works out good, man. It looked like one of those. It was hard to see some of the knuckles in there, so that swelling looked.
I have no knuckles right now.
Yeah. Ouch, that's probably a break, my man. So we'll probably not see you for a moment, but you know, you still got power in the other hand, so I know you could go if you had to.
Yeah.
All right, well, yeah, feel free, man. Please reach out when you get details after you go see the doctor or whatever. You know, we'll put whatever you need out there, and give my regards to the family. I appreciate you taking the call on your day off, and yeah, buddy, we'll talk soon. I appreciate you taking the call.
Oh, no problem, man. All right, take it easy.
All right, man. Take care.
Look at Cole Coffee go. He's got his reporter game on. That's what I'm talking about. All right, listen, a couple of thoughts. I hate spending too much time on old cars when we're talking about an and a half episode that's not an and a half episode. It's too late in the week. I know you've already talked about it by then, but did just want to give a couple quick thoughts. James Vick, man, you know, I know he wanted to finish there, but I thought he did a great job handling himself all week. And in the aftermath, he's continued to say, listen, you know, I demand what I deserve. And I like that. I like the fact that he's keeping his name front and center out there and calling people out by name, everybody in the division. I like it. And not, you know, not cheesy stuff. I mean, just saying straight up, listen, man, I deserve these shots and you need to give them to me. And the dude does have an impressive record, man. It was a slow start to his career, but he's certainly on fire now. Curtis Millender looked fantastic as well, man. Just that dude is scary, man. I wanted to pick Curtis in that fight, but I thought, oh, this would be that moment where he gets a little bit overwhelmed and then he'll be dangerous later on. But no, sir, he looked fantastic. He is big and tall and lanky and dangerous in that division. And, man, I don't know where Thiago Alves goes, man. 12 years in the game. It's crazy. It's crazy, man. You know, I've got in my living room, I've got a UFC 100 autograph poster hanging up. It's kind of a cool, you know, marker of time. UFC 100, that, you know, that big moment in history, and you see, you know, the folks that are on there: Brock Lesnar, Frank Mir, Michael Bisping, Dan Henderson, George St. Pierre. And Thiago Alves, those are the faces on the poster. Man, the days are coming to an end for all of them. It's crazy. So Thiago says he feels better than ever, but that was a tough one. That was a tough one to recover from. Brandon Davis and Steven Peterson. I was looking forward to this fight. I picked Steven Peterson because I just knew what a tough guy he was. You know, a Dallas boy fighting out of Fortis MMA, so I was certainly familiar with his game, watching him come up. You've probably seen some of his fights in Legacy, but just as tough as nails, tough as they come. And, you know, he was getting ready for a fight, and Brandon Davis wasn't. Brandon Davis was, you know, came in on short notice, but props to Brandon Davis. That dude is fun as hell, too. I mean, these two dudes put on a scrap. And, you know, a lot of people I saw were critical of this fight. It's so weird to me. I mean, I get it. You know, you have to, you know, you want to showcase the highest level of MMA. These guys are both still developing. There's no question about it. And you want to showcase the highest level of MMA. But we're always talking, too, about needing to build stars, needing to build stars. How do you build stars? Well, you give them opportunities like this. I mean, you're telling me you don't want to see these two guys fight again? Of course you do, man. Not every fight is going to be, you know, pure art. And you know, refined martial arts at its finest. There are going to be people that brawl. There are going to be people that just move forward and show that I've got a better chin than you do. And that's part of the game, too. And I don't want every fight to be like that. But I don't want every fight to be a jiu-jitsu chess match. I don't want every fight to be, you know, a wrestling chess match. I don't want everything, you know. It just can't be. That's what makes the sport so fun to me, is that, you know, yeah, you see patterns in fights and, you know, but thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of fights, no matter how many you've seen, you know that anything truly can happen in this sport. And I don't know, man. I just wasn't as critical as I saw some people saying, ah, what the hell are these guys doing out there? I thought they went out there and put it all on the line. And props to them, man. I'll tune in next time for both of them for sure. Sage Northcutt did pick up a win over Thibaut Goody. I understand why Thibaut was frustrated, but I do think Sage did more to win this fight. I definitely understand Goody's frustration, and it was a close fight. You know, Sage is, you know, not going out there and lighting the world on fire. He's still developing too, no question about it. But I thought Sage did enough to win the fight. It wasn't necessarily controversial to me. Diego Fajeda with the impressive win over Jared Flash Gordon. It was good to hear Diego back and to welcome him back in. And a guy that, again, by all accounts, from everybody I talked to behind the scenes, you know, swears to God he didn't cheat on purpose, and but doesn't make excuses. Took supplements that he was told would be good for him and didn't bother to check it out. He says, now I get everything checked out. So a word to the wise. Make sure you do that. Jeff Neal with the submission win over Brian Quelzy. Jeff Neal, get on this bandwagon now. And did you see the story? So the guy waits tables at Texas Roadhouse to help pay the bills. And he kind of mentioned nonchalantly afterwards that this was a big moment for him, that he had no money in the bank, and that he actually had to use his per diem money, because when the UFC, when you check in to the hotels, the UFC just gives you an envelope full of cash to take care of your expenses for the week. Jeff Neal said he had to use that cash to pay for his rent. And here's another one of those stories, right? On the surface, it sucks that somebody is a high-level athlete is in the UFC and is scraping by like that, right? It does. But at the same time, Jeff Neal just got to the UFC. I mean, that was his debut. Before that, he was in LFA. He just got here, right? So you can't ask him to be rewarded, I guess, as, you know, that high level athlete yet. I mean, you say, well, the UFC is a pinnacle. So I see people argue all the time. It, you know, to say somebody is a UFC level athlete, it doesn't mean the same anymore. You can't say he's a UFC level athlete. And you know what? They're probably right about that. I mean, now that there's 600 people on roster, you know, that means a lot less than it used to when there were 100 people on the roster. Man, if you were in the UFC and you were one of 100, you know, you were a badass. Now you're one of 500, you're one of 600. You're still a badass, let's be honest about it. You didn't make it to the UFC without being a badass, all right? Whoever you think is the worst person on the roster, whoever you think that may be, would whip your ass, okay? So let's get that straight right now. But we're saying that it's not that they're not UFC level, but then at the same time we also bemoan why these guys aren't being paid like football players, like baseball players, like basketball players. And listen, there is room to grow. I am not saying that, hey, the UFC is a charity and they're paying out as much as they can. Of course they're not. Of course they're not. There's a reason why everybody, you know, that was a part owner in this thing cashed out really, really well. Okay? I get it, man. There's room to grow. And I hope these organizational efforts work. I really do. I think the UFC, the fighters involved could definitely use some collective bargaining and could definitely use some assistance there. You know, I think the thing is they all need to work together. I don't think it needs to be combative. I think if your fighters association is dug in against the promotion, the UFC, the biggest promotion in the world, that's not going to be positive either. I think it needs to be a good working relationship, and that's what I want to see happen. I think that is what will make it work. But anyway, long story short, I said, let's say, here's a guy that, yes, we, on the one side, we could just trash the UFC and trash the sport, and, you know, why is it that here's this guy? On the other hand, you can also take a step back and be like, my God, this guy, Jeff Neal, man, the sacrifices he's making, waiting tables so that he can afford to train and fight, and then making it to the UFC and picking up a win. I love that. I really do love that. And I hope that, you know, a sponsor will get behind him. I hope that somebody will hear that story. I mean, hopefully somebody from Texas Roadhouse gets behind him. Give that man a raise. I know when I used to wait tables in Texas, it was $2.13 an hour for service. I don't know if it's gone up since then or not, but get this man a raise. Give him a bonus. Do something. Put him on some of your marketing campaigns. I mean, Texas Roadhouse. Come on, man. The tie-in's right there. What else do you need? Jeff Neal. Roberto Sanchez, a guy who picked up an impressive win as well, talked about his full-time job that he has as well. And he said, I'm not giving up my full-time job. I still couldn't tell you what he does to this day. He's sat there in front of me and explained it to me. And I still couldn't tell you what he does. An actuary? Is that right? An actuary analyst? Is that what it was? The guy helps calculate the risk that's involved in insurance policies in order that you can set the pricing levels for them. Huh? Huh? What? That's a job? How do you do that? And how do you, not only how do you do that, how is your entire job about risk analysis and you decide that in your free time you want to be a cage fighter? You telling me there's not some risk there? What a great guy, man. What a great story that was as well. If you didn't catch that, pretty funny. And he said, listen, he's like, I fight because I love it and I want to. And, you know, I happen to be good at it and I want to show the art of jiu-jitsu. But I don't have to do this. I don't have to do this. And I'm never giving up my job because it's a good job and I worked hard to get it. So pretty cool stuff. Lucy Pudilova with the unanimous decision win over Sarah Morris. Hard fought fight. Questionable stand-ups in there. A little bit of early officiating, maybe nervous in there, but I did think Lucy Pudilova had done enough to win the fight. I know Sarah was a little bit frustrated with the result, but Lucy's tough, man. She is as tough as they come. Alex Morono with the big win over Josh Berkman. And then Morono calls out basically anybody that's 40 or older in the UFC. No, I thought it was great. He's a great dude, but huge UFC fan, and has grown up watching the sport. And he's like, man, if I can get a chance to fight my idols, how amazing could it be? I just had to laugh because in the press room we were kind of joking. He's like, he basically just called out like everybody that's old and about to retire. Give me the oldest, slowest versions of these fighters that you ever could. And Oscar Pichota picked up the first round TKO win over Tim Williams, fighting the United States for the first time, the Polish fighter there. All right, so enough about Austin, right? Just want to give a quick review. I want to get back to doing end-of-halves as often as possible. I couldn't because I had to get an early flight because of the way the schedule was. And then it was Monday, and I thought about if I did it later. You know, then all the other shows are on Monday, so then you've already got – I mean, you got – how many MMA podcasts are out there, right? You can only listen to so many, and there's already so many, you know, on Monday because that's kind of when the week starts. I like that Sunday slot for the and a half episode, because there's not a lot on Sunday, right? I feel like we could fulfill a need there for you, fill a void, so to speak. So, anyway, my apologies that we didn't get one done. Hopefully I can, I don't know, hit me up too. I can do one for UFC on Fox 28. That's no problem. It'll just be me. It'll just be me. Cold coffee's in Florida, but I could do it. I'm not there, so I don't have any behind the scenes. But maybe I can relate. I don't know. It's going to be tough. But I like talking about it. Even though I'm sitting here talking to myself. I'm talking to myself right now. I still love talking about the fights. All right. Anyway, listen. We're going to shift gears to UFC on Fox 28. Stevens versus Emmett down in Orlando, Florida. But I want to say something. This is kind of weird. I'm actually reading this as I'm sitting here. I was kind of switching gears and closing some windows on my computer. I got this email in from Golden Auction PR. It says UFC championship belt, $44,000 price tag makes the highest price piece of UFC memorabilia ever sold at auction. Pretty cool. I'd seen something about this. I wanted to put something on the site. I just ran out of time. I mean, obviously there's so much content to get to sometimes. But this was pretty cool. So it was a recent auction that was held in, well, I guess it was online. Yes, it was held online. But I guess this company is based in New Jersey called Golden Auctions. But they had the UFC 5 championship belt that was created for the super fight between Ken Shamrock and Hoyce Gracie. Now, of course, if you remember that fight, it ended up being a draw. There were no judges at the time. 36-minute draw. So because of that, the super fight championship belt, now you remember, I mean, that was basically just an excuse to get Gracie and Shamrock together. They had wanted to do it, but, you know, you start doing tournaments, you never know how it's going to turn out. They had wanted to do it. So anyway, they created the super fight. Ends up being a draw. So the belt is never given to anybody. April 7th, 1995 was the date of that fight. It's never given to anybody, so it sits around in storage, I guess. And they finally brought it out to auction this past week. And it sold for $44,190. Pretty cool. It's a pretty cool piece of memorabilia. Kind of weird, right? Like, I mean, it's a title belt. It's not somebody's title belt, so it's not attached to somebody. But, I mean, the two people that were fighting for it were Hoyce Gracie and Ken Shamrock, two of the biggest names the sport has ever had. And then it doesn't get given out, so it's definitely unique. You know, it's like I actually have a ticket stub from UFC 151. The canceled show. I wanted the poster. Man, I wanted to try to get the poster. I was told they were all destroyed. I wanted to get some of the other stuff. But anyway, yeah. I wanted to get that, but I couldn't get it. So, I don't know why I said all that. All right, so this is one of those things, though. UFC, the championship, I would never be able to pay $44,000 for it. But that's pretty damn cool, right? I mean, a title belt that was never issued. So I just wonder, I mean, is it less because it was never, like, would you rather have, like, Hoyce Gracie's championship belt or something like that, I mean, versus a title that was never issued? Still pretty cool, nonetheless. Anything from that era is cool. I hope someday there's an actual physical UFC Hall of Fame. I really do. I know there's a UFC Hall of Fame now in theory, and I love the way they're doing the inductions now and the speeches, man. They keep getting better and bigger, and it's cool. I like it. I do. I think they're making small improvements, but I hope there's a UFC physical Hall of Fame someday where some of these artifacts and memorabilia and stuff like that can be displayed. You know, I know at one time they'd mentioned considering the possibility of it being at T-Mobile Arena. You know, with T-Mobile Arena, them being an anchor tenant, it is a pretty cool idea. And at first I thought, well, you know, then the arena would have to be open. There'd have to be an event going on. But there's a gift shop there that sells, like, Vegas Golden Knights memorabilia that you can get to even on non-game days. I think it's pretty much open, like, every day between, like, 9 and 5. I mean, if you built a museum on there of some kind, you could still get to it. Or at least like a part of a museum. And then maybe you have a bigger thing somewhere. You know, they had talked about maybe building it at the UFC headquarters. But you can't do that. Like, it's the whole thing's behind a gated wall. So, I mean, you'd never – the security there would be a pain in the ass. You'd never want to do that. There is some more property nearby. There's kind of some warehouses behind it that's already built up. But there is some space on each side of them if they wanted to buy a little bit more land. I don't know. I mean, I know that's not priority number one, but I do think it is something that could be kind of cool to have a place where people could go, an actual physical Hall of Fame. I think at some point would be pretty cool. I guess before we completely move to Orlando, I should say one more thing. I did get a chance to have a couple of frosty beverages in Austin with a couple of local cats there and talk some shop and just enjoy it. Found a cool little bar. Man, Sixth Street is awesome, man. The whole area. We weren't necessarily right on Sixth Street. We were a little bit closer to my hotel, but found this cool little hole in the wall bar. Kind of a punk rock kind of bar in there. It was cool, but sat down and drank some beer and talked some shop and you know, it was they probably wouldn't care if I told who it was, but whatever, privacy or whatever, we were hanging out having some beers. But it was funny because we were talking about the sport of MMA, and you know, having kind of a waning interest. And it seems like everybody's talking about this right now, right? Everybody's writing stories about it. Every website is doing it. And, I guess it's because the TV deal is up, and it sounds like, you know, that they're not going to get near the $400 million they thought they would. Now, I don't know. I mean, if they get $200 million from Fox and they get, you know, $100 million from a streaming service, or I don't know. I mean, I don't pretend to know what that is, man. The people that are negotiating that stuff are not talking about it. I can tell you that because the people internally that I speak to, you know, they don't know the details. Everybody's kind of in the dark. But I don't know what they're going to get. You know, maybe they will. Maybe somehow they'll pull a rabbit out of the hat and get this $400 million, and then they'll come out with middle fingers in the air and tell everybody to stick it where the sun don't shine. But it is funny because the first thing is this. Is that it's kind of weird. Like, if nobody had ever seen the investor documents that they were hoping to get $400 million and they got $200 million a year, wouldn't that be seen as a positive? Like, their last year, this year, they're making $160 with Fox, I believe, is the reported number right now, $160. And if they signed for $200 million, which means that immediately you're talking about a 25% increase in revenue. And that's from the highest year. And that was a scaled deal. And that's from the highest year. And now your new deal is worth more every step of the way. Like, wouldn't that be seen as a home run? I would think so. And, I mean, when you go into negotiations, do you always ask for the price you want? Or do you kind of fudge the number a little bit and knowing that you're going to settle somewhere below that? So, I don't know. It makes me wonder. If nobody had ever seen the concept that the UFC thought they could get $400 million a year for their product, if they got $200 million, would anybody be complaining? So that's kind of a weird thing for me to think about. And then the other thing is this, you know, talking to somebody, and it's something I've seen, you know, a lot of people saying lately, that their interest is waning. Their, you know, their concern, you know, their fandom is kind of going away. And I get it. I'm one of those weirdos that loves this stuff. It's loved it for 20 years or whatever, and still enjoy the fights. I still get passionate about the fights. Still get passionate about the prelims. You know, I still get excited about these athletes and their stories and where they come from. And I wonder if it's because I don't care what the UFC gets paid for their TV deal. I mean, listen, I want the industries to grow. So I guess in some ways I care because I want to have a sport to still cover. Otherwise, if there's no sport to cover, there's no need for me to cover it, and I don't have a job anymore. So from that perspective, yeah, I guess I care, but I don't. It's a privately held company. I don't care how they run their financials. I mean, when it comes to fighter pay, sure, I'd like to see them paying more. I'd like for every fighter to be wealthy. Love for it. I mean, I'd love for it too. And I would like for the fighters to organize. I think they do need to be involved in some type of arrangement, you know, with this money. Like, to me, that only seems fair. Again, I don't want to see people combating the UFC. I want to see them working with the UFC. But I think the UFC does have some responsibility to open the books to at least a degree and share some of this to make sure that the split is equitable, I guess we'll say. I think we're gone beyond a time when people say, well, I don't want – a lot of people don't – you know, some of these guys don't want people to know what they make. And I do think that's true, believe it or not. I do think some fighters are happy that people don't know what they make. More money, more problems, right? But, you know, they should have the right to at least behind the scenes. Even if those numbers aren't made public, you know, I think they should have the right to deal with it. So anyway, I don't want to say I don't care about finances because that's not what I'm saying. But, like, you know, what's the ratings trend? What's the? I'm not a television ratings expert. From what I hear, ratings are down everywhere. My understanding now is television ratings suck because people are cutting the cord. They're going with on demand services. There's a million channels to choose from. There's just people are watching. You know, I guess I don't know if people are watching less TV. I just think it's the number of distribution outlets and the methods that you can gain them. The television ratings are down everywhere. Now, have I done a study to see how, you know, the ratings decline in the UFC compares to how it does in other sports or whatever? By the way, those other sports that are signing billion-dollar deals, I don't know. But it makes me wonder sometimes, like, if, like, why we care so much about the business behind it. I don't ever remember, you know, growing up and – I don't know. I don't know how that impacts fandom. I mean, I get it. As you know, as a website and as a news outlet, we have a responsibility to cover those things. Fortunately, we're not a staff of one, and we have other people on the staff that are a lot more excited, enticed, you know, want to dig into those numbers. I prefer to dig into the athletes. You know, I prefer to discuss those stories and to talk about the fights themselves. You know, maybe that makes me dumb. Maybe that makes me simple, as somebody has called me before. I'm okay with that. I'm all right with that. I love the Cowboy Cerrones and the Yancy Medeiros of the world and hearing their story versus, you know, maybe talking to an executive who's going to give you corporate speak and never really tell you the truth about anything anyway. But I don't know. I just wonder, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe other fans are like this in other sports, but I really feel like in this sport, people care more about the business side than they do in other sports. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't follow a lot of other sports, but I don't necessarily like, you know, I grew up in Dallas. I'm a Cowboys fan. I don't watch as much football as I used to, but I still, on Sundays if I'm home, I still do love watching the games. I think it's as much as just kind of a reminder of home more than anything, you know, but I mean, do football fans, like, talk about what the Frito-Lay sponsorship is worth or, you know, what the impact of, I mean, I guess TV ratings with the people, you know, the protest, you know, Colin Kaepernick and all that. I mean, I guess the Jesus Christ, the president has thrown television rating. I can't believe I'm saying that. The television ratings into, I mean, I guess so. Maybe that's a bad example. I don't know. Does it happen in baseball? Does it happen in basketball? Does it happen in soccer? I don't know. I just feel like fans, and maybe it is because, again, I do live life in the MMA bubble. There's no question about that. So maybe it's just, you know, because I'm usually conversating with the hardest of hardcore. Maybe there are the hardest of hardcore, those other sports as well that do dig in as much into the business. But I don't know. I'm just curious. Maybe you guys have some insight on that, like, you know, how you follow other sports. But I say all that to say, man, I can understand if you're covering the business of things, how all of a sudden, you know, the product itself isn't as fun anymore. You know, because now you're looking at everything from a business perspective and not an entertainment perspective. I don't know. I prefer to still cover the sport as a sport with results and documentation of history and focus on the athletes. And that's the way I prefer to cover the sport. I understand we have a responsibility as journalists to cover, you know, some of the business aspects of things, especially if we feel the practices are unfair or untoward towards the athletes. And there's certainly a responsibility to do that. And that's one of the reasons I'd love to see some unionization or an association or whatever the case may be, so that, you know, the fighters do have more of a say-so in what type of income they're given, you know, and is there some type of pension that can be made? You know, I do see a lot of opportunities there. But I just wonder, from if I was just a fan, you know, if you're talking about these fans that have watched the sport for years and love the fights and love the fighters and all this, and now they're saying, I don't like it anymore, you know, I don't care about it as much anymore. I get there's a lot of reasons why, but a lot of these people, you know, talk so much about the business side of it. I just wonder if maybe that impacts their fandom. No, something I was thinking about. I'm sure somebody will tell me I'm an idiot, but that's no different than any other day, right? All right, let's talk about UFC on Fox 28. As I said, Cole Coffey is down there. He is exhausted. I will say this, my man Cole Coffey, man, and pulled the red eye. You know, we're trying to save those bucks, man. We're trying to do what we do, make the bean counters happy. And so Cole Coffey booked himself a red-eye flight in late Tuesday night. It's that same one I take. It's the 1:20 a.m. from Las Vegas to Dallas, and then you connect in Dallas and you leave out wherever you're going. And, of course, he was going on to Orlando. And Cole Coffey missed his connection, very much like Tiesha Torres, same situation, had a weather delay and was not able to get on his flight. So he missed his connection. Ended up did getting there, but was late, basically, and kudos to Matt Erickson who picked up the slack. Luckily, he had his camera gear with him because, you know, we always schedule a few extra interviews. I mean, the UFC does schedule media availabilities, but we always try to book in a little bit extra. I mean, as long as we're going to be there, let's get a few extra interviews, get a little bit extra content, you know, whatever we can. And Matt ended up having to execute those on his own. because Kenny wasn't there. But wait, Kenny, who's that? Cole Coffey didn't make it. But he did. He did end up making it for the afternoon. They made it for open workouts, and then, of course, today was media day. But he is wiped out. I know. I talked to him. He's still grinding right now as we're sitting down to record this. But he's exhausted. You know, that you take that red eye, and then you add in some complications and some delays, and that slowed everything down. Next thing you know, your first work day is basically like a 24-hour day. Because, come on, man, you know, you nap on the plane a little bit. I think he has more trouble sleeping on planes than I do. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I don't know how bad I snore, and I don't know how bad the people next to me are making dirty looks at me. But I can sleep on a plane, man. I basically fall asleep before the damn thing takes off, and then land, you know, wake up when it lands. So I tend to get a little sleep, but man, you take that red eye, you know, and that flight to Dallas it's about 2 hours in the air. So it's just enough to get a little sleep, especially if you want to have like, you know, maybe one cocktail to help you nod on out. And it's just a little bit. So you wake up, grab your stuff, move on to another plane. And then, you know, I think it was probably another, two and a half hours down to Orlando for him. But, you know, he had the delays as well. So, yeah, anyway, he told me today he is feeling every bit his age right now. He's like, I'm getting too old for this shit. I turned 40 in next month. I'll do it during the London event. And he's a couple years beyond that. So we're still trying to hustle like we're young guys, at least when it comes to work. Maybe we don't hustle to the gym quite as much as we should. But we try to hustle a little bit. And, man, it would get worn out. So he's been down there covering that. Hopefully you've seen all the coverage. It's on MMA Junkie. It's on the YouTube channel as well. Jeremy Stephens versus Josh Emmett in the main event. You know, not a lot of hype, and I completely understand. It's funny, and I felt the same way kind of coming into this week. Like, Jeremy Stephens versus Josh Emmett. Wow, that's kind of a lackluster main event. And you know, no disrespect to those guys. I mean, it is a little bit of a lackluster main event in terms of, you know, that's not a title fight. It's not that big, sexy fight that you want. But it is a very intriguing fight to me. Now, in the UFC's rankings, I think they have Josh Emmett way up there. Of course, you know, it's one of those hard situations. Those, you know, he comes in, he scores a big upset win over Ricardo Lamas, and what do you do with him? But I think they've got him, like, way up at number four. Now, Gorgeous George Garcia from MMA Junkie Radio, he handles our ratings panel, and then I actually help execute the whole thing, but he's kind of the lead voice in it. Now, we have a couple Bellator guys in there as well at featherweight, but we have Josh Emmett at number 12, and we have Jeremy Stephens as an honorable mention, so just outside that number 15 slot. And I know even George was a little hesitant to go as high as 12, but you know, you pick up a big win like that, you got to be rewarded somehow, you know. And so that's what we have. But it is intriguing because I do feel like Jeremy Stephens is fighting better than he has. I mean, I know we're only talking about a 2-fight win streak, but he has looked good. And the other thing is his head, man. The things he's saying, the things he's talking about, the way he's handling himself, you know, the life changes he's made. It really does feel like he's kind of firing all cylinders right now, even though he's already been in the UFC for 11 years. Crazy how long he's been in the UFC. And he says, look, it's just now starting to click. You know, really, I've paid my dues. I've put in the time, and now I'm starting to kind of reap the benefits of all that. You know, and some people would say, man, that far into your career, like, you've already reached as high as you're going to be, you know. And I'm not saying we're talking about Jeremy Stephens' next featherweight champion, but we are talking about a dangerous, dangerous fighter who seems to be getting even better now. And then Josh Emmett, who incredibly is older than Jeremy Stephens. Double-check the stats on that. You wouldn't think so, right? I mean, because he's the new guy in the division, right? He's just getting here. But truth is, he's been around for a long time. The guy's been kind of lurking in the background, and just due to injuries and some other things that were going on, he really had a hard time getting his career going. So now he's kind of trying to make up for lost time with a quick rush. Tough fight to pick, man. I mean, Josh Emmett, boy, that shot he knocked out Ricardo Lamas with, that's knocking out anybody in the division. I actually went with Jeremy Stephens right now. I feel like, believe it or not, you know, he's the hotter hand. I feel like he's more battle-tested for moments like this. And I feel like Josh Emmett is as tough as nails, but his hand breaks a lot. Not that he won't just fight right through it. But, you know, I do think that could be an issue in this fight. You know, especially over the course of five rounds. You know, not just three rounds. We're talking about five rounds. So there could be an issue there. And I do feel like Jeremy Stephens, again, fighting better than he ever has. I go back and forth on it, man. I mean, Jeremy Stephens has had his share of losses. It's not like we haven't seen him lose before. But, I feel like he's kind of the hotter hand right now, and I feel like he's the more informed guy. I feel like they're both hard-hitting guys. You know, wrestling, we'll see. But I do like this fight, and it's big. You know, for Jeremy Stephens, I mean, if he loses here, again, he's still going to be around for a long time. He seems like a guy that, has he's going to be in good fights, right? So, I mean, I think the UFC brass likes having him around. He'll fight. You know, he's doing a six-week turnaround here, a second main event. Crazy, right? I mean, now here he is, you know, kind of coming into the spotlight 11 years into his career. Meanwhile, Josh Emmett just getting started in his UFC run, but making that fast rise and says, listen, I got to make up for lost time. You know, I want to be a world champion. And I know I'm taking the short track, but that's because I deserve it. And I've been around. I've been with Team Alpha Male my whole life, and I deserve this opportunity. So big, big fight there in the main event. And the co-main event, real big at strawweight as well. Jessica Andrade versus Tisha Torres. Love this fight, too. Jessica Andrade, a big favorite, which I was a little bit surprised to see. To me, I thought more of a toss-up. You know, I thought this was more of an evenly contested fight. Now, Andrade certainly has the power, the aggression. There's no question about that, man. She gets a hold of you. She can take you for a ride. But Tisha Torres, such a well-rounded fighter. And I think, you know, kind of finally living up to the expectations that she had for a long time. Maybe I had higher expectations on her than most for a long time. There was, gosh, I think way back in the early days of MMA Junkie, not the early days, I should say, but well before Tisha had ever turned pro. I remember an MMA Junkie radio faithful just singing her praises like as an amateur. So we started watching her super, super early on in her career. And, you know, he was touting her from the very beginning. I felt like I got to see the inside tracks. I felt like I've always had really high expectations for Tisha Torres. And she's living up to those, you know. The only loss at this point to Rose Namajunas, which, you know, no shame there. That's the champion, right? Jessica Andrade, meanwhile, you know, has looked fantastic as well. She just had the recent loss to Yoenia Jacek. Jessica Andrade has been coming out saying she's actually cheering for Rose Namajunas in the rematch, which I thought has been kind of interesting. A little bit of subtle shade at Joanna, the women's division, turning on Yoenia Jacek. She said, you know, I'd love to have my rematch, but to be honest, I'm cheering for Rose Namajunas. So a big fight there. So, I mean, two big meaningful fights at the top of the card. I get not necessarily the star power that you might hope with the familiar names, but again, I mean, you gotta move the fresh blood in too, right? You gotta put them out there. You gotta give them a chance to shine. You gotta give people another set of names to follow. So I like both those fights. I think those are really meaningful fights in their respective divisions. One, of course, with the ladies, Andrade Torres should determine who gets the next title shot after UFC 223. So I think, you know, the winner of that will probably be up there in Brooklyn, New York as a guest fighter and hanging out. So big, big fight there. Ilir Latifi, Vince St. Preux, big fight there as well for a completely different reason. I don't think we're necessarily talking about next title contenders or anything like that, but both these guys are coming off wins. And both have a penchant for being... Oh, my God. I'm so tired. I apologize. It's terrible to yawn. And I'm sitting here excited. I'm pumped. I'm not bored. I'm not boring myself. Hopefully I'm not boring you. I just had to wake up at 4:30 this morning. I was the early guy. Dan Stupp, if you guys don't know it, our editor-in-chief at MMA Junkie, he's in love right now. He's got like this real serious girlfriend. Are we peeling back the curtain a little bit too much now? He's got this real serious girlfriend that he didn't have for the longest time. So all of a sudden, he's taking weekends off here and there. That means me working at 4 a.m. in the morning. Oh. Anyway, Latifi, Vince St. Preux, not going to determine a number one contender. But certainly two guys that are exciting. And you know that light heavyweight division, every win matters because it doesn't take much for you to move up the list. And then Max Griffin versus Mike Perry kicking off the main card. Come on, how do you not want to watch Mike Perry get out there? I hate to say this is a showcase. I like Max Griffin. He's a tough fighter. I'm a fan of his, and you know, I think he's shown some durability and some toughness in the right to be in the UFC for sure. But on the feet, this could be trouble for him. He's got to get inside and get this fight to the ground, I think. Meanwhile, Mike Perry fighting at home, you know, fighting in Orlando, his adopted hometown. And, you know, he says it's going to be something special. Interesting to note, it sounds like he's doing the whole fight week at the host hotel, and then going back home after the weigh-ins and kind of resting at his house on fight day. Interesting. You know, I've always, you know, when I first started paying attention to that was when I moved out here to Vegas, back in, 2007, 2008. Because the fighters that live here at Vegas events would handle it different ways. You know, some people said they like to pack up and go to the host hotel so they had that distraction, especially if you have kids and responsibilities around the house. You know, you're trying to get yourself into that mindset and meanwhile, you know, Junior needs help with his homework, and you know what I mean? There's stuff to be done. The dishes need done, and the trash needs taken out, and you got to do all that stuff. So it's such an interesting way how you handle fight week when it's fight week at home. And so you know, do you like to go and have that distraction and stay there so that, you know, you can get yourself into that kind of battle mindset, so to speak? Or, you know, a guy like Frank Mir would always stay home. And, he's got a bunch of kids, and he loves it. For him, family is everything. You know, his family is everything, and that's what makes him comfortable and happy, and that's what he wants to be around. Now, Mike doesn't have kids or anything like that, but, of course, he has his girlfriend, and I think they have a dog. Yes, they have a dog, because he said he was going to pet his dog, I believe, if I remember the quote right. but he said he's going to stay, you know, he's doing the fight week, and then after weigh-ins, he's going to go home, relax, you know, chill in his house, and, you know, the UFC will come pick him up and take him to the arena. And I don't know, it's weird. This game is so mental. Yes, it's physical, but it's so mental as well. And I always wonder, when you make little changes like that, how does it affect you? Is it positive? Is it negative? Does it cause problems? So that's something I'll be interested to see how he reacts. Henan Barao on the prelims against Brian Kelleher, not a matchup that probably anybody imagined before it was announced, but you know, Brian Kelleher trying to make his way up the ranks and now finding a former champion. This is a big moment for him. Of course, Kelleher has made a quick rise in the UFC and had some interesting matchups already. Now fighting a former champion, Henan Barao, who was kind of at a crossroads. Spent his whole training camp out at American Top Team. Fernando Prochus did a nice piece on him for MMA Junkie, if you want to check that out. You know, he had trained in Arizona for one camp and then decided to go to ATT. I said basically the bottom line was, you know, Arizona was great, but at ATT, he just had the number of training partners there was unbelievable, and that really helped him out. So he went and spent his whole time at American Top Team. So big matchup there. Sarah McMahon versus Marion Renault. Angela Hill versus Marina Moroso. A couple of big women's fights in the middle of those prelims. Those prelims are on Big Fox, so you're going to see 4 hours of programming on Big Fox, which is pretty cool. And, of course, that kicks off with Alan Chobon versus Ben Saunders, which is certainly going to be a lot of fun. The 10th Planet on 10th Planet Crime, as Ben Saunders has been calling it. Not guys that have trained together extensively, but guys that have trained together before and do consider themselves, you know, friends through the 10th Planet system. But, of course, they do have their other gyms as well. Saunders trains out in Florida at American Top Team. Joe Ben spends a lot of time at Black House as well. But they do train under the 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu system with Eddie Bravo. So they do consider themselves extended teammates. You know, but this is not exactly like two guys from AKA going at it or two guys from Team Alpha Male going at it. So teammates, but extended teammates. But nonetheless, should be a lot of fun. And I think from what I understand, Eddie Bravo isn't even going to be in the building. Like, he just doesn't want to see the fight. He didn't want the fight to happen. But Joban said, you know, look, this is the fight they offered, and I've been begging for a fight, and this is all they had. And Saunders said, all right, well, if, you know, if that's what's on the table, that's what's on the table. Let's do it. And then the fight pass prelims, four fights there. Of course, we did lose one fight earlier this week with the Gilbert Burns issue with weight coming in, allegedly 30 pounds over. Oof. Said he would have cut, no problem, but, you know, the UFC being a little bit proactive and didn't even want to start the cut. So, tough situation, but anything people try to do to make weight cutting a little bit better is a good thing. But the fight that I'm really looking forward to on the prelims, Alex Perez versus Eric Shelton. I'm a sucker for the little guys, man. I'm telling you, I think these. I get it. Some people, you know, aren't fans of the small fighters. I tend to think they're incredibly exciting. I think these two guys looked great last time out, and I am definitely looking forward to this matchup. I think these guys are both very talented. I think that's the gem for me on the prelims. All right, listen, I won't keep you too long. I've talked to Cold Coffee a little bit, but, you know, I like to provide you some on-the-site stuff. Fortunately, we will both be in Vegas next week, and we can get the team back together, get the crew back together, myself and Cold Coffee. I just found out today, actually, the young Mike Bond is actually going to be in town as well. He had some personal things going on down here in this part of the country, so he figured, hey, why the hell not roll out and do it? So he'll be here, so I'm sure we can incorporate him into our coverage as well, including the MMA Roadshow. And then, again, we'll probably talk about some of the stuff that Cold Coffee and I want to do. We mentioned, you know, maybe setting up a Patreon in the future to help us kind of take this thing to not necessarily the next level. I'm not trying to act like, you know, we're something bigger than we are, but we would like to do some new stuff. We would like to do some things that will help to ensure that we can always broadcast together, because I know you don't like hearing me all by myself, because it's just boring. You want to hear the more talented, more entertaining side of the podcast that is Cold Coffee as often as possible, I know. And again, we talked about doing a video component at times. We got got one or two things up our sleeves that if we can make those two things work, we've got a little couple other things we could do that we think could be a lot of fun. But they don't come cheap, and unfortunately, they don't come on the expense account of USA Today either. So we've got to fund that ourselves. So anyway, we'll talk about that moving forward. I will say this. I am committed to making sure the podcast is free. You know, the Patreon support, we'll just do as if anybody wants to help support the show, we definitely appreciate it. But at the end of the day, I get it, man. It's not everybody can afford to spend even, you know, $3 a month, $5 a month. You know, to some people, they can't do that. So for that reason, I will always commit to keeping sure that the content is free, so that even if you can't support us, you can just support us with a thank you, a tweet every now and then of support. You can always log into iTunes and rate us and review us. You can do any of that. But yeah, we'll be back together, and then we'll start laying out the schedule for the spring. I will be in London. Cold Coffee won't go, but we're going to have a crew over there. The great Simon Head, I know, is going to be in town for the week. Of course, our videographer, Abby Subban, will be handling business over there as well, so I'm sure we can incorporate those guys as well. We'll have all kinds of stuff happen. And that'll also be my birthday. Technically, March 15th is a Thursday. That would be when we would record the podcast. That would be my 40th birthday. So I guess I will be recording the MMA Roadshow as I turn incredibly old. But we'll get to all that. In the meantime, enjoy UFC on Fox 28. I'll be watching just like you on TV. And thanks for listening.